When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Bookmarked is brought to you by Libro.fm. Get two books for the price of one with your first month of membership using the code BOOKSTACKED. Again, use promo code BOOKSTACKED when you start your membership at Libro.fm. Or check the show notes for a quick link to get started. Offer only valid for new members in the US and Canada.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Bookmarked, a young adult book podcast from Bookstacked.com. Today, we're talking about Netflix's adaptation of Shadow and Bone. This is the first time we're seeing the Grishaverse on screen, which is super exciting. And we're definitely all excited to talk about it because, well, I can tell you there are eight of us here, which I don't know what our record is for most people on a podcast, but I think this has to be one of the larger ones. It's been a long time since we've had a really big YA blockbuster, I guess, like a really long time. And so I think a lot of people are really excited about this series, and we're definitely excited to dive in. But first, I want to introduce everybody who's here. So my name is Saul, and today I'm joined by Mary.
Hi, guys.
Brigitte.
Hi, guys.
Spencer.
Hi, everyone.
Chelsea.
Hey.
Christy.
Hello.
Addie.
Hello.
And Brittany.
Hi.
But yeah, okay, now that that's out of the way, I do have a confession, or something that that's been on my mind since watching the show. I have been pronouncing Grishaverse as Grishaverse for a long time, and I think I was wrong.
Anyway, I pronounced Grishaverse, and they said Grisha, but I still pronounce it Grishaverse because I'm like, well, Grishaverse just sounds weird. Like, phonetically, that does not work for me.
I've seen at least two YouTubers say the same thing. Just the entire time. They're like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to pronounce it Grisha now because I don't care.
Yeah, the thing is, when I read... So I read Six of Crows before I ever read Shadow and Bone, which we'll get into in a bit. But when I first read these books, I was saying Grisha. But it's at some point along the way, I heard other people saying Grisha, and I self-corrected myself. Well, I guess self-not corrected myself and taught myself to say Grisha. And now I have to try and get myself to say Grisha again. So I'm apologizing in advance. That's why I wanted to get it out of the way first. I will likely say Grishaverse at some point during this podcast, or probably more than likely doing some sort of mix of Grisha and Grisha. So just apologies to our listeners if that's the case. But there are a few things we wanted to go over before we dive into everything. First off, if you like the show, please subscribe and leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. That definitely helps us, and it helps other people find the show. And we're really grateful for everybody who does that. And also, sometimes you don't see it, but like the people who reach out in DMs, like on Twitter or Instagram and stuff, there've been a few of you. We really appreciate it. Again, it's just great to know we're not speaking into the void. And that we haven't been for the last 6 years. So we really appreciate all of that. The next thing I wanted to do just really quickly is, like, we've had a lot of really strong content out of Bookstack to the last few months. I know our podcast discussions have been a bit more sparse, but that's largely because the website has been taking off like crazy. And I'll say, like, we're finishing April with the highest readership we've ever had at Bookstacked, which we keep breaking our own records, which is exciting. But because of that, there are a lot more time has been put into the website and into the writing rather than the podcast. Not that we're giving up on the podcast or anything, but I'm just saying we've done a lot on the website. One of the things, though, that is podcast related is that Christy just interviewed Joan Hee. That episode's already out, so hopefully there's a good chance you've already heard it. But I thought that was like an amazing interview, such an interesting book. And Christy, Joan is somebody that you have known for a while. You've been following her work for a while. Just I wanted to ask you, how was it to finally like talk to her in this setting? What was your experience like?
It was really awesome getting to meet Joan. Yeah, I've been a part of her street scene for a couple years since her first book, Descendant of the Crane, came out. So I've known her for a couple years now. So we finally got to, you know, meet via online. And it was really cool. She's so nice. She's so down to earth. And for my first solo podcast interview, it went really well. So I'm really happy with it. And I hope you guys enjoyed it.
I don't know if you mentioned it in that podcast, but I just want to call out the cover to that book.
The Ones We're Meant to Find.
The Ones We're Meant to Find. Yes. The cover is incredible and beautiful. And like the detail in the waves and just the illustration of the two sisters. Like, I don't know. I think covers are totally a reason to buy a book. I've definitely done it before. And so if you're looking for a beautiful book to put on your bookshelf, this is definitely one of them for sure. Something else we wanted to do, which is related to today's topic, or I wanted to highlight, which is related to today's topic, is Chelsea and I worked on a guide to the Grishaverse, which I think is pretty extensive. Chelsea helped a ton with the Six of Crows stuff, and then I filled in a lot of the Shadow and Bone things, and I just really enjoyed putting that guide together, and we did this cool thing where we kind of designed the page to like add colors and just kind of make it look cool and Grishaversy, if that's a word. So thanks, Chelsea, for your contributions to that one.
I will talk about Six of Crows forever. So really was not that hard at all. Very happy to help add that content.
I remember when I was an intern and they asked me to write a guide to the Wizarding World leading up to Crimes of Grindelwald. And I was like, you don't understand. I've been preparing for this my entire life. And it was so easy. Anyway, that's just like what that reminded me of. And then a couple of last things to just kind of point out. The Divergent anniversary. I don't know if that was on anybody's radar, but it's been 10 years since Divergent was published. And so I thought that was pretty neat. And then Victoria Aveyard's book, Realmbreaker, is releasing, which Chelsea's doing a little dance. She's a big Victoria Aveyard fan. I read the book. I really enjoyed it. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I feel like it's unfortunate there isn't a huge fandom just for Realmbreaker yet because it's so new. Because there's a lot of stuff, like there are a couple of really great twists that I would love to discuss with people. So anyway,
I'm really glad to hear that because I'm forcing my book club to read that book. So I'm glad it's good because it is long and I feel kind of bad that I'm making my friends read it, but I am so pumped to find out what happens in there.
Okay, I'm not going to stall any further. Let's jump into the Grishaverse and start talking about Shadow and Bone. I want to start off with, I think it's a tradition now, whenever we do a book to film adaptation, who here hasn't read the books?
I have not read the books. They've been on my radar for years, especially since I started going to Y'all Fest and, you know, Leigh Bardugo was there. I just, college and life and adulting just gets in the way. But I did order them and they should have them by next Friday.
I read the first one. I got through half of the second one before I DNF'd Shadow and Bone series. But I've been wanting to read Six of Crows way longer than I wanted to read Shadow and Bone. So I do plan to go back to the universe and read Six of Crows soon.
I also have not read any of the books. I don't have any good reason. I think I've just been living under a rock. And when I heard of the Netflix adaptation, I just decided to wait on it. Sometimes when I hear, you know, like a book is getting a big adaptation, I'll just wait and see and kind of join in on the fun and the momentum when it releases. So that's where I was at.
I've read all of them. I think maybe it'd be good to explain just really quickly for listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with the book series. There's three series really in this world. The first one is Shadow and Bone, which is a trilogy where Alina, Mal, and the Darkling are the main characters. And then the second is a duology that is Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom, where the main characters are Kaz, Inej, and Jesper, along with others, including Nina and Mateus, who are also in the show. But chronologically, book-wise, the trilogy happens and then Six of Crows happens. That's also how the author, Leah Berdugo, wrote the books. And so I think a lot of people have the idea that they should read Shadow and Bone trilogy first and then read Six of Crows. But I'm here to say, I think it is okay if you read Shadow and Bone and you don't love Shadow and Bone to just go to Six of Crows. Because Shadow and Bone and Six of Crows, even though they are the same world, are wildly different stories. Shadow and Bone is really kind of the TV show, or those three characters part of the TV show. It's this Chosen One story about sort of destroying this big darkness that they have to fight. Six of Crows is a heist in the same world, but like completely different, and a very different tone and a very different feel to it. And I don't think I'm saying anything wildly out of line when I say that Six of Crows is agreed upon kind of a better book. I think Shadow and Bone was like Leah Berdugo's first book ever. And for that, it's like, holy crap, well done. But I think she's really learned so much, and you can see that in Six of Crows. And so, yeah, if you're one of those people who like really struggled with the Shadow and Bone trilogy, go to Six of Crows. You will not regret it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair recommendation. I started with Six of Crows, not for any particular reason. I think I kind of missed the Shadow and Bone wave. It came out in like 2011, I think, the first book. And I just wasn't reading much during that time. And so when I started picking up reading again a couple years later, I think a lot of the Shadow and Bone hype was already over. And then Six of Crows came out a couple years after that, and there was a lot of talk about it. I remember if you're like a really old podcast listener, you remember we used to have someone named Ariana on the Bookstack team, and I remember that was the first time I'd heard of it, and she was raving about it, and so I picked it up and really enjoyed it. I didn't even realize, I think, at the time that it was connected to a previous series, but anyway, I loved it, and that said, I don't remember much of the book because it has been several years, but I remember loving it. I remember the characters, Kaz, Jesper, and Inej, like they're hard to forget. They're so good. And anyway, for me, that was definitely what I was most excited to see in the show. But I did binge all three books in the last couple of weeks, all three Shadow and Bone books. I have to say, when I started reading the book, the first Shadow and Bone book, I was really into it. I felt like it started off really strong, and then it sort of fizzled about midway through that first book. And I was like, oh, okay, I see what everybody's talking about. But the entire time I was reading it, I kept thinking, this is like a really cool world. I already know Six of Crows is good. Just like the whole concept of the Grisha and how they manipulate matter, like they're not doing magic, right? They're doing the small science or whatever. I just loved that entire concept. And so even though I'll say that the Shadow and Bone books weren't my favorite, they still hyped me up for this show, because the foundation and just like the groundwork of what Leigh Bardugo was doing in those early books was just beautiful and amazing. And I think it created a really strong foundation for the show, because we haven't gone into what everybody thought about the show yet, but I'll be the first to say I thought it was really, really good. I thought it was very strong, and I think it's probably the best book adaptation that I have seen since The Hunger Games, specifically Catching Fire. So I highly recommend it. But what did you all think about the show? And I'd love to hear, too, from people who have read the books. How do you think the show represented Leigh Bardugo's material?
I think the show was better. And part of that was that we were not in Alina's head. So there was a lot So I really like this kind of overview of the world. And particularly, we get to see Mal, and we get to see his point of view beyond the letters. And so their relationship is much more developed. And since it's at the core of these books, it just made the entire thing a lot better. Instead of just hearing Alina think about, oh, how much she loves him, and Mal running off to flirt with whatever Grisha, you actually see him return that feeling from the first season. So I really like that. That was perhaps my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, I only read up until like halfway in the first book, and this is probably going to get a little off track, but I didn't realize that the Six of Crows was going to be in it. So I had no idea who these people were, and I was like, oh my gosh, what have I missed? But I still liked how they changed that up, and, you know, even with seeing Mal and his side of the story is really helpful, because I think it adds a lot more depth into their relationship, and even just the story in general, I think, helps move it along. And then I just think the world that they created on the show is magical. I love the costumes. I know that's not really bookish, but I'm like, these costumes are amazing. And I think all of the actors portrayed their characters so well, just based off of what I read in the first half of Shadow and Bone, but I loved it and I could not stop watching. And now I'm upset because I can't binge anymore. So
yeah, I knew Six of Crows was going to be in there, but I knew, like, it was going to be a different, like, a story we didn't know. And they had that first shot of them, like, zooming in on the island, and, like, the Ketterdam comes up in the corner, and, like, you see Jesper, and then, like, Kaz has his big moment. And I finally had that moment where I was like, I now understand when people cheer in a Marvel movie, because I'm, like, sitting in my room by myself, and I'm like, yeah! Like, I'm so excited to finally see these characters. And I think what you said, too, the casting of those main six is eerily incredible. It is exactly right for all of them. Jesper's comedy to, like, Matt. Like, I liked Mal in this, which I was not ready to do at all. I really hated him in the book, so I was really happy to, like the guy you're supposed to like, finally. But no, I think it is really hard for a movie or a TV show or an adaptation to be better than a book. I think this one is definitely better than Shadow and Bone. I don't necessarily think it's better than Six of Crows, but I am really excited, and they better get there, because I think once they get to that material, it has a chance of, like, rivaling it because of everything that they've set up. And I will also say, I loved the story they create, like, the new stories they created, too. Like, I liked the books, but I think this really showed, like, what you can do when you have the author on your side. Leigh Bardugo's name is an executive. I think she's an executive producer. She's been very involved with this from the start. And because of that, you can feel that all the changes that they've made were made with, like, a really specific point. I think that was really important to this, too, that it wasn't the book was this precious thing they couldn't change anything about. They made changes and shifted and moved in different directions in really great and, like, innovative new ways for the material.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think this is one of those perfect examples of where the book doesn't, or the movie doesn't need to match or be a perfect adaptation of the book, which I know we've done an episode on, or I think we've done a few episodes on book adaptations in general in the past. And I think I've said it then, and I'll say it again here. Like, I don't necessarily believe that a book needs to perfectly there needs to be a perfect correlation between the book and the movie. In fact, I feel like if you try to do that, the movie's going to be pretty bad, more than likely, because they're just different mediums. And when I was younger, like a kid, and I heard that, like when I would listen to directors and producers and screenwriters talk about changing the book, I'm like, no, that's so stupid, you idiot, because the book is perfect, and why would you change it? Like, it doesn't make a difference that it's a different medium. But now I really do feel like, no, it totally is a different medium, and the language of storytelling is different from a film versus a book. And so this is, yeah, a perfect example of that, where when you're willing to bend the rules a little bit and explore, then you're going to create not just a good show, but what Brigitte said earlier, I agree that I think the show is better than the book. And so that just kind of shows you like the amount of power you can have when you have that support from the author, but also when the author is open to things being changed. And also the fan base. I feel like the fan base has been very open to these changes, which isn't always the case. But as far as I can tell on Twitter and everywhere else, people generally are very happy with the changes that they made to the show.
Yeah, I liked the show so much better than the book. Like I said, I kind of DNF'd the series. But I think it went better, actually, as a show and incorporating Six of Crows, because, like, you did have time to flesh out these characters through 8 episodes compared to, like, a 2.5-3-hour movie as to where everything goes, like, really slowly or really fast. And, like, I think introducing the crows was important because not only do you get this world that people love, but if people like Six of Crows better, you also get that, oh, like, here are these characters I love that may not have gotten their own series but are incorporated in Shadow and Bone some way.
And also because the fun of Six of Crows is that those guys are so unexpected. I think the best part of like any heist book, but especially that heist book, is you don't know how they're going to pull it off. That's the fun. And so it was really fun having that, like, you knew what Alina and Mal and the Darkling story was kind of going to go, but you didn't know at all what the Six of Crows characters were going to do. And that made it really fun, even if you had read all the books, because you're like, I have no idea what they're trying to do right now, but we're going to find out. And as always, they like manage somehow to get themselves out of trouble all the time. So I think that added a nice twist to it.
I think too, this was the probably first adaptation that I felt I could watch and enjoy like as an adult and not through like young adult eyes. I'm probably pushing no longer young adult age, but I feel like they did such a good job at it. Was dark, but not too dark. And it was comedic so that it's not so serious. And it was just, I think the characters were amazing. And even Chelsea, when you talked about the Six of Crows, again, I had no idea who they were, but I loved them being in there. So I'm like, how are they going to pull this off? Are they crazy? What happens if they don't? Do they know how guarded she is? Does she know all this stuff? So I really enjoyed it even as like a grown adult and not just a YA person.
I think they also, what I really liked about this too, is they knew what to cut too. I think part of the problem of Shadow and Bone is it's long, like she spends a lot of time in the palace. And she has to, she's got to like learn to use her powers. In a TV show, though, that can be 2 or 3 scenes and then we're good. And I thought it was so smart how they had each of those moments that, like, you wanted to see from the book. Like, you wanted to see her fight one of the other Grishas. You wanted to see her have these moments with Bagra. You wanted to see her and Jenya sort of form this relationship. And those all happened, and then it was done. And I thought that was a really smart pacing tool, too, that they kind of pulled out all the extra to it and kept things moving along. I need to shout out Milo the goat, because I think that was maybe the best part of the show. I'd also like to say that you can't hear them right now because they're all muted, but everybody's laughing with me. That was incredible on the train, and then he saves Matt. Like, that goat should have been a main character. I don't know why. That goat deserves a spinoff. That was such a fun idea, and it was so well executed, and it just added this like layer of comedy that was beautifully done. And I just, props to whoever came up with that one. So good.
That was amazing. I mean, it gave the show some levity without making it like over the top. And I'm currently rewatching the show again. I finished it last night. I'm on episode 5 right now. And I'm still like laughing. I already know what happened and I'm still laughing. Like, I know the scene is coming up, but I'm still enjoying it as much as the first time. And the, like Chelsea said, the pacing of all the scenes was really good. You get a sense of like, oh, she's been here this long within like two or three scenes without having it to be like half the episode. So the editing team did an amazing job on that.
I agree. Having never read the book, I would still highly recommend the show. Like, I'm interested in reading some of the books now. I didn't feel lost at all. Like, it was easy enough to follow, especially because there are enough familiar tropes where I can kind of understand what's going on. We got a chosen one. Okay, we got some light powers. We got some dark powers. I know who the good people are. I know who the bad people are. You know, it's easy enough to kind of follow along. And then the world is, it's really interesting because it pulls from a lot of familiar elements from YA and almost seemed to pull from both things from popular fantasy series and popular dystopian series at the same time, I was picking up on. And so those little details really didn't matter to my viewing of it. So for example, I'm just learning, I guess, that this was all science. I thought it was fantasy. Did that really shift what was going on for me? Not really. I just assumed the way they were all moving their hands that they were just basically all like airbenders and firebenders, like in Avatar is what it looked like to me. But that didn't affect like my enjoyment of the show at all, right? I could still follow along with all the action. And so I do think that they did a great job, especially right, a Netflix show that is really aimed at bringing in a wider audience. You can just hop in and enjoy it right away. And I found that the show just got better and better as I watched through, and the more that it moved into the plot, the more I got into the show.
I feel like I should clarify really quickly though that it is still fantasy and they are doing magic, but like they don't, in within the world of the Grishaverse, they don't call it magic themselves. Well, I think some people do sort of in a derogatory way, but the Grisha, their whole thing, and one of the cool sort of, I don't know what the right word is, flavors or sort of world building things that Leigh Bardugo does is essentially it is like airbending or waterbending or anything, firebending or anything like that. But they actually talk a little bit about what's going on, like in a scientific ways, sort of like we're manipulating the matter. We're not just creating fire out of nowhere. So it just kind of takes little elements like that into account. Anyway, just thought I'd clarify that.
No, that's good. I've got lots to learn coming into it fresh.
And I think one thing that's really important to mention with this, too, is this is not an all-white cast, which we are very used to seeing in adaptations of YA. But the decision to make Alina part Shu, which is a different country than the country that they're in of Ravka, that decision to cast biracially, I think shows a really important step forward for YA adaptations.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to bring up. I for sure felt that, and I loved the fact that they were being conscious about diversity in this series when, yeah, this is a huge issue in fantasy across the board and science fiction, like massive. And I saw a lot of people too talk about how they really appreciated that. For me, one of the big things I noticed right away was, and we already kind of touched on this, was the fact that Alina and Mal are both mixed race. Sort of, it explains some of the motivation or explains some of their intentions as children to kind of come together. And I liked that aspect of it. One thing, though, that there has been this really big discussion online, and I saw it a lot on Twitter, though, is while it was an attempt to be more diverse, it still fell short in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so I follow a lot of fellow Asian book bloggers online, and I actually stayed off Twitter because I didn't want to be spoiled by the show. So I didn't really know about any of the discussions going on around it, but there was the scene I think that really hurt the Asian community was when the maid made a comment about Alina's eyes and how they wanted her to look less Shu. And I think that's what really sparked the conversation and hurt a lot of people. So that's when I finally got on Twitter and I saw everyone talking about it. So I definitely understand the hurt people feel from the show.
I saw a lot of that discussion as well on Twitter. Then I was watching a booktuber review it, and she's Korean. And she said she really liked the change of making Alina half Shu, but I feel like she's in the minority. So I was very surprised to hear that, given everything that was happening on Twitter. But I thought it was a very interesting point of view.
One thing like I do want to point out, too, and especially when you're talking about like people of color, which a lot of people even say like that term has negative connotations to it, I think probably for this reason, or what I'm about to bring up, is there's just this tendency to look at people and groups of people sort of as this, like they're all the same and they all think the same. A monolith? Yeah, that's the word. Yeah, I have seen people who said they really appreciated it, but at the same time, you do still have a lot of people who were hurt by it. So I mean, sometimes I see that when people have these kind of conversations, it's like, well, you didn't like it, but so-and-so liked it. Well, it's because everybody's diverse, even within a minority group. And so there are mixed reactions to it. I, for sure, like some of the things I saw, like when I was watching it, if I'm being completely honest, but again, I'm probably ignorant to this. Like I thought like, oh, this is a great idea. I'm glad they did this. But as I started reading some of the criticisms and stuff, I was like, you know what? I can see that, like that makes sense. And I guess what I hope more than anything is that everybody is heard, and that Lee Bardugo and everybody else involved with the production will take this as an opportunity to get to learn and just do better. Not like do better like in a bad way. Like, you know, we all want to be better. We want to progress in our storytelling and in our ability, yeah, to tell these stories. And I hope that they're able to use this as a learning opportunity to get there.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen any of the, I don't spend a lot of time on Twitter, and I just finished the series recently, so I hadn't seen any of the backlash from the Asian community, but it's one of those things that I definitely want to take a look at and see maybe what I, as like a white consumer of this, missed. Like, it was just so nice to see not an entirely white cast in a fantasy that I didn't maybe think harder about it, and I think that shows sort of how far we still all have to come.
This episode of Bookmarked is brought to you by Libro FM. Get two books for the price of one with your first month of membership using the code BOOKSTACKED. Libro FM has the same audiobooks at the same price as that other audiobook store. You know who. But when you purchase from Libro FM, you're purchasing audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. Be part of a different story and support your community. Again, use promo code BOOKSTACKED when you start your membership at Libro.fm. Or check the show notes for a quick link to get started. Offer only valid for new members in the US and Canada.
Okay, I want to move on. big question I have is, will there be a season two? And I feel like, I don't think there has been an official announcement yet, but I feel like it's inevitable. Like there will be a second season almost surely. As far as I can tell, this show has done extremely well for itself. And people who have and haven't read the books are big fans and are consuming the show. And it's been so long since we've had something like that. I think the last one was like Divergent, maybe? The Maze Runner? I don't know. It just like, you get what I'm saying? Like a blockbuster franchise that has brought so many people, even non-readers, in. It's been so long, and I've been waiting for it for so long, and I'm so happy that it's finally happened. I feel like the next one will probably be Percy Jackson eventually when that comes to Disney Plus. But for now, I feel like this show has really taken off, and I'm hoping there will be a season two. But one thing connected to that is, my big question is, how is Six of Crows going to play into a season two? Do they still have like two other parts to this prequel to the Six of Crows that they're planning on doing? Or do you guys think we're going to start seeing elements from the actual Six of Crows book integrated into the storyline?
I think the inclusion of Nina and Mateus's story in season one shows that, because I think chronologically it was like she got to Ketterdam, the two of them got to Ketterdam like 2 years before the events of Six of Crows. So it would make sense that she, I love that ending where Kaz is like, gonna need a heart render, and she's sitting like right there and it's like, oh yes, can I help you? That makes me think we're definitely going to see more of them. I also think just how much they were included in this first season means that they're not suddenly going to be like, eh, we're done with those guys. We'll catch them later. But all I can say is there better be a season 2 and 3 and 4. We need to get to the Six of Crows heist, and if we don't get there, I'm going to be severely disappointed.
Well, that's the thing, is if you look at it, right, because there's 3 Shadow and Bone books, so that would be season 1, 2, 3, and then you got 2 Six of Crows books, so that's 5 seasons, and I'm hoping for that, like you, but Netflix does have a history of just dropping successful shows. Usually at season 4, it seems to be season 3 or 4, and there are a few that make it, like, but these are like their huge headliner shows, like Stranger Things or The Crown or something like that. And so is Shadow and Bone one of those as well? And I hope it is, because I really want to see the Six of Crows story as well. But part of me is a little nervous. Like, I think we're probably going to get a season 2, but are we going to get like all the way up to season 5?
I was just going to say, if I had it my way, just as someone who's just seen the show, I would love for them to do maybe 2 or 3 seasons and just continue to intertwine it as they have. I think the characters that I liked the most, the storyline that I was most invested in was the crows. They were really lovable and just really fun to follow. But of course, what made their story interesting was that it was like set within this bigger world conflict, and so you needed Alina and Mal and the Darkling and everything else going on to really give weight to what the crows were doing. And then I would like to, I guess, see more from Nina and Matthias, just because I was totally confused as to why they were even in the show, to be honest. I just kept cutting to them and I was like, well, I have no idea who these people are or why they are involved in this season of this TV show. So I assume that they will play bigger roles in the future, and like, they were nice enough that I'm interested in learning more, and hopefully they can all, you know, continue to be intertwined, because that's what I found fun, was those moments where the storylines met. We mentioned the one right at the end, right, where Cass says that he needs a heart render, was such a great moment. The other, my favorite moment in the whole show was when Alina is escaping the party, I don't know what else to call it, and then she just jumps right into the trunk in the wagon while Jesper's standing there. I just thought it was just really, really excellent writing, that such a payoff moment, that she did exactly what you would want her to do. It was great. And so those moments where the stories staying together were the best part for me, so I hope that they continue to be intertwined. That's what made it a worthwhile show from my perspective.
I have one thing that sort of creeped me out, because I've been a fan of Ben Barnes since the Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, and like, huge crush, not gonna lie, when that came out. I was like, I love you so much. So I followed him ever since. And so when this came out, I'm like, how old are you? And I was like, I'm really scared to look up the age difference of these actors, because I'm afraid it's gonna ruin it for me. And lo and behold, I looked it up the moment I found out that he was not who I initially wanted him to be in this show. So it made it a little bit better to not like him, but it's just a really large gap for my liking, but I still really love him. So
there's a funny article out there about this with Ben Barnes and how he's so much older than the rest of his cast members. That he still wanted to be friends with them, so he sent them a how do you do, fellow kids meme in their group chat, which I thought was pretty funny. But when it comes to the Darkling, I was hoping we wouldn't talk too much about the Darkling, because oh my gosh.
Is this why you left it to the last minute to bring it up, hoping nobody would bring it up?
I wasn't going to bring it up at all. Okay, you people who ship the Darkling, we're going to leave.
I'm going to say 2 words, Ben Barnes.
What was that?
I'm going to say Ben Barnes. That's all I'm going to say.
But I got to say,
sorry. I'm going to say 2 other words. The alternative in the book, well, not 2 other words, but the alternative in the book sucks. Mal sucks.
But see, that's and how Nikolai, I feel. I hear people talk bad about Mal, and I'm like, the alternative is so much worse.
is it the...
You turn around and you see how much he, like, hurt as a kid or teenager, young adult, whatever, and then you start to like him. So I thought this was, when I first started,
I thought we were like, oh, like he came from such a horrible family. He was so alone. Like I totally bought it. I bought all of it. And I don't know if that speaks to her writing or if that's more Ben Barnes because I knew he played this character. Like I was all in. And the whole time I was like, please don't be a bad guy. Please don't be a bad guy. Please don't. Please don't. And then, you know, it just sometimes it's just nice to fall for the bad boy every once in a while.
Can I just add, though, that that scene at the end with Alina and Inej was amazing. They had incredible chemistry. I would ship that. It was like the one moment where the two women got to like have a moment and it was beautiful. And I was like, can they just hang out? We can get rid of all the boys, right? Like the two of them can just hang out and I'm cool.
I think we need to do a second Shadow and Bone chip cast, like just another hour of this, all our favorite pairings.
Oh gosh.
No. We need to dig into Jesper and there's so many great pairings in this show.
Jesper had chemistry with everyone.
Every single person on the screen.
Such shout out to that actor, because he kept so much levity in moments where you would never expect it, or he just made every single one of his lines I was laughing at. Like, they were all perfect one-liners. Oh.
I mean, I felt like we had chemistry when I was watching the show. I was like, we are connecting right now across through the screen. Like, so you know you're doing a great job.
Be my best friend, please, because you're a great time.
Yeah, he had the best one-liners, like, when Kaz asked him to, sneak into some place, and he's like, handsome is not one of my talents, you know? Like he has the best one-liners in the entire series. We gotta, like Chelsea said, we have to give him props. He just has, like, the best timing, and it's never too much.
Okay, I'm ending the conversation here, because clearly we can keep going on. Yeah, that's Shadow and Bone. Obviously, we're very excited about this show. Looking forward to hearing news about a season 2, whenever that comes, and anything else that happens. Of course, we'll be covering that on Bookstacked, and I think it's likely we'll be talking about Shadow and Bone again here on the podcast. Thanks for listening and joining us today. If you like the show, please follow us on Twitter. We're at BookmarkedYA. You can also follow the website Bookstacked online as well. Just look up Bookstacked on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Normally we go around and share everybody's personal social media accounts, but there are a lot of us here, so I'm not going to do that right now. However, they are all linked in the show notes. So if you want to follow any of us, you can do that and get quick access to everybody's social media handles. Until next time, we'll see you guys later. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye.